If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. The summer season is off to a wild start weather-wise, with record rain in the mid-Atlantic and hazy heat in the southwest. All of it has Democrats warning that federal budget cuts that took effect earlier this year could put millions of Americans who rely on national weather services at risk.
We must take the steps to cancel sequester.
Maryland Senator Barbara Mikulski. The U.S. Public Interest Research Group says the rate hike on federal student loans will impact 7 million students and will add $7 billion to their financing costs. That works out to an average of $990 per student, the group says. And if you're thinking about trying Long John Silver's new Big Catch meal, you may want to think twice. The Center for Science and Public Interest says that the value meal features an alarmingly high level of trans fats, 33 grams to be exact, which is more than 16 times the daily amount recommended by the American Heart Association. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Hi there. Welcome aboard. This is ConservativeNationRadio.org. You're listening to Radio Free America, the Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013 edition. Duke Brooks is my name, as always. The number here at RFA on CNR.org is 718-305-7176. Very glad that you could make it. Looks like chat operations are underway, and that's, I suppose, a good thing. Now then, little tiny bit of housekeeping up at the very beginning. I had mentioned last night when I called in to speak with everyone on our Tuesday evening show, which is Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, that tonight Gary O'Neill, the author of the book, which apparently is a bestseller called American Warrior, would be joining me tonight. Sadly, I got a call from his people earlier today. He has people that he is sick. He's ill. Now, Gary is a gentleman apparently in his early 70s, and he served our nation with distinction as a combat airborne special forces ranger. I mean, these are very, very serious qualifications. If you're going to be in the service, I mean, it is extraordinarily hard to be a paratrooper. And on top of that, to get into the Green Beret or the Special Forces, and on top of that, to be a ranger, it is I think it's paratrooper, then ranger, then special. I think that's the hierarchy. But since I've never served in the military, I'm not absolutely positive about that. If you know, please give me a call and let me know if I'm going wrong somewhere. The number is 718-305-7176 here at Radio Free America. Anyway, Gary O'Neill's not going to be with us. He will be joining me at some point in the future, and I'm hoping that that will happen before the end of July. Because I absolutely love to speak to people that I admire. I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I've always thought that it is best basically to, you know, one can learn things from people that have accomplished more than the inquirer has. And have we all, I mean, is there anyone out there that has not at some point in their lives been on either side, or maybe both sides, I don't know if you could be at the same moment, but on both sides of the equation where you either know a lot more than someone else does and they're trying to learn what you know, or you've met someone that knows a lot more about something and you would like to learn what that person has learned. I got an email the other day from somebody who is a very loyal listener, and he said, please tell some more helicopter and airplane stories. We love it. All right, let me give you a very quick one here. If you've heard this before, you can call me at 718-305-7176 and stop me. I don't think that you have, but that's okay. Anyway, if you know, every once in a while I think about this. This is a flashback to a time in my life when I felt like I was literally on top of the world, maybe had conquered the entire world or something, I don't know. It is February of 1981, and in February of 1981, I was in Gainesville, Florida, under circumstances that were utterly amazing. I had spent the previous year pitching a radio station in Syracuse, New York, on the idea of a traffic helicopter. Because since the time, or as they say, since I'm 12 years old, I have wanted to fly a helicopter and be on the radio reporting traffic. And I was very, very specific about where I wanted to, you know, my goal was to do this in Baltimore, which is my maternal family's ancestral hometown. Even though I'm from New York originally and I now live in Delaware, I think Baltimore is wonderful. We're going to be up there next weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. See my relatives, go to an Orioles game. It's going to be great. But anyway, it took a year of pitching, and I got the radio station. On the Tuesday before Thanksgiving of 1980, to agree to buy that Robinson helicopter, world's first radio station to buy a Robinson, and I sold it to him. And on top of it, to pay for my flight training. I knew how to fly an airplane. I had a private pilot's license in airplane single-engine land, as they say, but I didn't know how to fly a helicopter. All I knew was that I wanted to fly a helicopter more than anything in the world. Well, all right, let's not get – okay, I wanted to fly. And it worked, and I got them to buy the helicopter. So it now it is January 29th, I think, 1981. And here I am on an airliner at company expense flying from Syracuse, New York in late January. And let me tell you something. Syracuse in late January is a meteorologically and environmentally very cold and wet and windy and utterly inhospitable place. The fact of the matter is you really just don't want to be there unless you have to. So I'm flying at company expense to Gainesville, Florida. I look back now and I realize I really maybe should have timed that better, or perhaps I should have not told as many people where I was going. And however, everybody at the radio station was very excited because we knew we were going to be just destroying the competition in that market, and we did. So I arrived in Gainesville. My instructor, a guy named Jim Smith, who was from Olathe, Kansas, and was teaching people how to fly helicopters in Gainesville, who was about the greatest guy I ever met in my life. He met me at the airport. I went to the hotel, which was the Holiday Inn right on the campus of the University of Florida at Gainesville. And the next morning, I started flight training. So now we are about 3 weeks into flight training, and now I have gotten permission and what's known as a sign-off on my logbook to solo the helicopter. And Jim signs me off, and I, you know, this is my helicopter. It no longer belonged to Ken Brown and his company, Ken Air. I wonder if they're still there. I don't know. I don't. It was wonderful back then. It was just a wonderful experience, but I would take it out and go soloing in it for an hour in the local area a couple of times a day. And I remember one afternoon I was getting ready to go flying, and Jim had signed my logbook, and I was going to fly the helicopter up to, You know, I don't know, maybe over to Daytona, and typically I'd go there and get lunch, and then I'd fly back, and that would be my, you know, 1.7 hours of soloing in the helicopter as a student pilot. And I was doing the pre-flight on the helicopter and was checking the oil, you know, dipstick in that Lycoming 0320 engine. You drain out a little bit of gasoline from the lowest point in the fuel system, the gascolator, to make sure that there's no water lurking there. You don't want water going into your car, you know, all the other things you have to do. And this guy, this kid, I was 25 when all this was happening, about 25 and a half. And this guy that was about my age, obviously a local guy from Gainesville, walked up to me. And as he walked up, I noticed him, and he had a very, very disturbed, angry, hostile look on his face. And the look on his face was so unfriendly and so menacing that for a moment I thought, what's this guy going to do? He's going to walk up and hit me. You know, I've never even seen the guy before. I have no idea who he is. And he came up to me and he said, "Are you that guy from New York?" And I said, "I'm from New York." And then the look on his face got even more angry. And then he said, "I heard you've got a radio station to buy this helicopter for you, and they're paying for you to learn how to fly it." And I said, "Well, yeah, that's right." And I was going to offer my hand to shake hands with the guy just to try to calm him down about, but this guy was just livid, just looking at me. He looked like he was going to, yeah, good grief. I mean, I think about it now, and for a moment, it's still scary. I mean, the guy looked like he was absolutely out of his mind with anger. And he looked at me again, and he kind of took a deep breath, and one of his hands was trembling. And then he said, "And they're going to pay you to fly it 1,000 hours a year, and you're going to be on the radio?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to report traffic with it." And at that point, I thought the guy was going to just lunge and attack. But at that moment, a car drove up on the other side of the fence from the FBO, the office, the fixed base operation there, the office building at the private side of the airport. I heard the car horn blow, and I heard a woman's voice say, "Peter, get your rear end over here." She didn't say rear end. She used a three-letter word. And at that moment, he just turned and bolted and ran towards the office building. And a moment later, I saw him run out to the parking lot where this car was pulled up. He got in, the tires squealed, and he was gone. And I thought, boy, isn't that weird. So I went flying, and I flew out to Daytona, and you know, had a wonderful time. When I'm flying a helicopter, frankly, I'm having fun. There was only one flight, one exception. We're not going to go there right now. But in any event, when I got back later on that day, I said to my instructor, "Jim, hey, who was that guy that came out and, you know, he looked like he wanted a fight? He was asking me about the ship and about my deal and everything." And Jim said, "Oh yeah, that guy Pete, he comes out here about once every 3-4 weeks, and he's normally got about enough money saved up to go flying for maybe 15 minutes, maybe half an hour. He only comes out here if he thinks his wife don't know where he is and what he's doing with their money." And I guess he heard about what you were doing, and he probably is a little bit jealous, I guess. And, you know, I've often thought about that, and I think, you know, if he had been a nice guy to me, and he had come up to me and said, "May I introduce myself, and, you know, can we speak sometime?" You know what? I would have been happy to say to him, "All right, look, when I went in to sell the radio station on this deal, here's what they asked me, and here's what I told them. There's a radio station right down the street from the airport. It's called WGGG in Gainesville. Why don't you call up and ask for an appointment with it? Maybe you can get a deal like mine. But he didn't. He was just, you know, hostile. Unbelievable. All right. Now, on to happier and more pleasant things. We here at conservativenationradio.org, we're all very proud and very, very excited and happy to welcome our new show, which is called Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance, and that's on our lineup on Mondays. Now, even if you are not from the volunteer state, you've got to know that the issues that affect Tennesseans affect everybody in the country. They're spreading out all over America. And my buddy Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and some of the most informed guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday. So make it appointment listening here on CNR.org. Make a note to yourself. You've got to check out Inside Tennessee. It is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee airs Mondays at 7, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org. We are real conservatism for real conservatives. 718-305-7176 is the number. I'm going to be joined in a moment by Mr. Greg Penglis, the only known conservative in San Francisco except for Dr. Michael Savage. Anyway, going to take a real quick break, and Greg and I will be back in two shakes of a lamb's tail, so stay right where you are.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
You must be your fairy godmother.
In the classic fairy tale, Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in there.
Especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size.
Oh, that does make a difference.
To make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Happy to see you. Thank you.
Remember, you're responsible for protecting your children. Their happily ever afters are in your hands. For even more information about choosing the right car seat, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
Prevent your child's next asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many. Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. Our number is 718-305-7176. That, of course, the Electric Light Orchestra and Summer and Lightning, and that is what we have been experiencing here on the East Coast for at least the last 10 days. Greg Penglis, what is going on in San Francisco, my buddy? How are you?
Well, good. Glad to be back on the air with you. It's been way too long. Thank you very much. First of all, our big news out here is that we have a BART strike, and that stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's our subway system. And these folks,
I heard,
they've inconvenienced about 500,000 people. And I was going to bring this up at some time in our chat, but let's talk about it now, because the whole question arises whether government workers should have the right to strike. And what they're doing here, what they're asking for, is just absolutely outrageous. These people make six-figure incomes. If you take, they want all their benefits paid for by the taxpayers. They want all their health care paid for by the taxpayers, no copay, no nothing. They want pension, you know, tossed in. They want all this other stuff that the rest of us pay for, and they're probably going to get it because it's the Bay Area. But people here should be screaming. The governor's done nothing. okay, the governor should step in and say, look, in the interest of public safety and everything else, let's get this going. And the other thing that has us all freaked out about this year is that because of the hot weather we're experiencing, normally these would be spare the air days. I heard this on Brian Sussman's show. He's a KSFO 560 AM guy. He's the morning talk show. He was bringing this up too. How come the Bay Area air quality management group hasn't screamed and yelled and said, you're having all these extra cars. You've got 500,000 people taking vehicles on hot summer days when they should be riding mass transit, but they're not saying that because mass transit, you know, is out right now because they're on strike because they're in sympathy with the mass transit people. So these folks are asking for the moon. They want pensions. They want health benefits. They want a salary increase. They want overtime. They want things that nobody is getting in this economy, nobody at all. And so a lot of us just don't have any sympathy for them at all. So that's our news. It's the BART strike is what's going crazy right now in San Francisco.
Yeah, that has made the national headlines. And, you know, obviously the idea of government employees having a union, especially a union that can actually strike, is absurd. From history, you certainly are aware, because I know that you are a learned guy, that right around the time of the end of World War One, I think in 1918 or 1919, the Boston Police Department went out on strike. The governor of Massachusetts at the time was this dude from New Hampshire whose name was Calvin Coolidge. A few years later, he would be president of the United States, and Governor Coolidge, then Governor Calvin Coolidge, Silent Cal, as they call them, had a great line. He said, "No union has the right to strike against the public safety anytime, anywhere, or for any reason." And he called in the National Guard, and that was the end of the Boston Police Department strike. But for a government employee to go on strike, frankly, I think it's outrageous. What is the general sense in San Francisco and obviously Frisco? What is the general feeling amongst the snobby left-wing elites out there who are now seeing, not as you mentioned, inconvenience, and in some cases, I would imagine it's probably causing a lot of financial and other harm to people?
Well, just checking the local news, there is way too little reaction as far as I'm concerned. I think because they did this right before the July 4th break, a lot of people are just either calling sick, taking an extra vacation day, or they're just not going to work. Had this happened at a busy time, say after Labor Day in the fall, everybody's working, I think it would have had a lot more impact. So my problem with the citizenry is that they're not reacting loudly enough. There's not a lot of complaints here. People are taking, you know, 3 to 4 extra hours to get their commutes done. So there's not the ringing environmental screaming. No, the leftist groups aren't saying, oh, no, how can you let all these people drive? You know, you must get the BART trains back. They're not doing it. So the feeling is it's nowhere near as strong as it should be. But you mentioned a couple of interesting things. Coolidge, one of my favorite people, and the fact that he called the National Guard in. I'd also remind people about the air traffic controller strike with Ronald Reagan, where they were all fired. And so the question, you know, and I've talked to people about this, is do government union people have a right to strike, and do they have a right to form a union? I think they have a right to form a union. I think if the public safety is impacted badly by bad government procedures, I think we have a right to know that. If they're working 20-hour days or horrendous schedules, you know, especially for things like air traffic controllers, that's something we can handle, but it has to be done through the legislature. It's not done through strikes. People, I agree with Coolidge and Roosevelt too. Franklin Roosevelt said the same thing. Government workers don't have the right to strike. So these people have no right to do what they are doing, and they should all be fired. I heard a caller say something else that was interesting too, that why isn't management stepping in? Why aren't they at least running some of the trains? Why aren't we hiring temporary workers to cover this? You know, it's not like these people are driving the trains. These things are all done by computer. So really what they do, the train operators, mostly what they do is open and close the doors. Okay, so this is something where we could take managers, we could put in some extra folks to work with this, and I think they could run at least a partial system. And none of that's being done. It's just the whole system just shut right down, and that's where we stand right now.
Well, I remember the 1981 air traffic controller strike because I was flying that helicopter I spoke about a short while ago in Syracuse every day, and you can't be in Syracuse without being not more than a few miles away from the Syracuse Hancock International Airport. But President Reagan was right to fire those guys. There's no question about it. I think that the idea that they would go out on strike like this, and California's a mess, buddy. I mean, everybody, I haven't been there in many years, but it's obvious they are doing things with money and with government and with unions and pensions and wages and things like that that are, not physically sustainable. My question is, what about the cable cars in San Francisco? That's actually a national historic monument. Aren't those cable cars nationally, aren't they federally protected?
No, you're talking about two different systems. San Francisco has its own transportation system. San Francisco Municipal Railway, okay? So within city of San Francisco, they have cable cars, street cars, they have the trolley buses, they have regular buses, and they have the muni, the light rail. None of that is being affected by the strike. Those folks aren't on strike. That's a separate San Francisco system. What's being affected is the regional subway, and this is the BART system. And this is actually a California system that all Californians pay for with their taxes, and even these people who don't use it. And this is a big scandal with BART. So this thing's being built. All Californians, if you're up in Redding in Northern California, you're 150 miles away from BART. You're still being taxed for this system. Okay? So it's incredible taxation without representation. And even so, they charge the fees for this, but it's not being paid for. It's mostly a tax-supported system. But it's California. It's a regional transportation system that covers several counties. It's got San Francisco city and county, which is the same thing. San Francisco is a city and a county. Okay, you've got Contra Costa, Alameda. You've got counties in the south. You got around. The BART almost goes to San Jose, and so goes the East Bay, North Bay, and it's a big and down the peninsula down to the airport. So you've inconvenienced people that want to go from the East Bay to the airport, not just to San Francisco. So this is the whole Bay Area, I'd say, within 20 miles in any direction of San Francisco is being adversely affected by this strike.
I really don't, I'm one of these people that thinks that it's great that there are railroads, and it's great that there are airports, and it's great that there are roads, and that there are subways, and there are buses and ferries and everything else. But I guess I think if those things, they really are kind of crying out to be built and operated, I'm not really sure why government should do it. Why can't a private company do it? All the railroads in this country at one point were privately owned, except for a brief period between around 1861 and 1865 during the unpleasantness. But even still, the private companies owned the rights of way, and they owned the rails and the track, and the locomotives were purchased by the federal government and the Confederate government down in that other part of the country. But I mean, I don't know why, if it really is that important, I don't know why a private company couldn't build that system. They can get bonds, they can get money. If they are absolutely sure it's going to work, people will invest money in it to make their money grow. I'm not really sure why it's left up to government to do it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we've got a variety of transportation systems out here, and I'm not sure whether the ferries are. I think the ferries might be private, so we do have ferry boats.
Sure.
The problem is parking, you have to drive to where the ferry boat is, and sometimes the roads aren't conducive to it. If you live near the ferry boat and you work downtown, it's great. But if you work anywhere but right where the ferry docks, you still got to take mass transit to go somewhere else. So each time you change transportation systems, you're adding to it. So I think I misspoke earlier. It's more like 50 miles from San Francisco that's been affected in any direction. It's a pretty big area. But here's what's interesting, what's going on. There's a reporter out of Sacramento called Katie Grimes, who works for Cal Watchdog. And she was reporting on how people are finding alternates to BART. So they may find themselves cutting their own throats because people are finding alternatives. One of them is a form of ride shares. And this is a new thing where you hop on your smartphone and get your app and you say where you're going, and a reviewed, registered person will show up in their car and you guys negotiate like a donation. You know, so it's not a cab service. Of course, the cab pays it. But it's a way to get to fill up a car privately as opposed to mandating it with a carpooling. So this is what's happening out here now. There are these casual commute areas where people are lining up by the hundreds, and people just show up in their cars, and they scoop up three strangers, and off they go. The rideshare thing is, I think, a little better because at least you're registered and it's recorded. So if there's a crime problem, I think it's a safer way to do it. But I think more people will find different buses. They might find carpool friends. They might find ridership, I think, is going to drop fairly dramatically after this strike because they just really, they pissed off a bunch of people, but not enough to really change the system. And, you know, people are still sympathetic out here because they're liberal and they're pro-union. You think, oh, we should give them what they want. And then if you tell people, okay, we'll give them what they want, but your bike fares are going to go up 25%. That might be a way to handle it, and that's really not getting out there. Those kind of things aren't being discussed.
Well, we'll talk about the reasons for that, at least my own theoretical take on what the reasons are. Greg, I'm going to put you into hold Never Never Land for a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more from Greg Penglis, one of the only conservatives known to human history out in San Francisco. Listen, you know, you're listening to Greg and I right now. This is Radio Free America. If you're listening to us here on conservativenationradio.org, I am going to presume, for the sake of argument, that you are a conservative, and that means that you love America and you love our Constitution just like we do. Now, since that's the case, you're going to want a Supply Depot to get everything from books and bumper stickers to patriotic t-shirts and flags, and your pipeline to all that good patriotic stuff is right here at conservativenationradio.org. Just go to our website, conservativenationradio.org, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That's going to take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag and proudly display your love for America and the conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Real conservatism for real conservatives. More Radio Free America with me, your buddy Duke Brooks, and my buddy Greg Penglis right after this. So stay right where you are.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of the Stones for Rad. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Try rooting for your own damn country for a change.
ConservativeNationRadio.org. This is Radio Free America. Duke Brooks is my name. The number here is 718-305-7176. That, of course, Penny Lane by the Beatles from Magical. You know, it could be any time of day or night, no matter what, there is always time. The Beatles are just appropriate to listen to no matter what the circumstances. That's the way I look at it. My buddy Greg Penglis is on the air with us right now from San Francisco. Greg, you were not out there during the Summer of Love and the Haight-Ashbury District times and all that stuff, were you? You've only been in San Francisco for a couple of years, correct?
No, not even close. I've been out here since 1984. I drove out here. I've been here for a long time. But I'm originally from Toronto, Canada, and during the Summer of Love, I was in Toronto, and I was only a kid. I was 7 years old. And so it was happening. It was a little bit before my time. But I'll tell you what I've noticed in California in the almost 30 years that I've been here. We used to have Republican governors. Okay? There was a moderate state. There were a lot of California natives. And so we had, there was actually a viable Republican Party. Budgets were somewhat reasonable. There was always a strong Democratic trend. But now I think Californians, native Californians, conservatives, business owners, producers basically, have left the state in such numbers that now we have a taker state. And so we have so many illegal aliens, so many people on some kind of government program, so many Democrats, that the state is basically a Democrat dream come true, and they're able to implement every policy that they want at will, and of course it's having disastrous results. So this would be a perfect case study for why the Democrat Party should never rule anywhere, be it Washington or a state, because the results are just absolutely tragic. And so that's the feeling I've got going on here. The state has changed. I've seen it, and I'm not going to be here for too many more years. I got some stuff to do here first, but when that's done, I'm going to be definitely checking out of here. And I'd like to change the topic if you want to. I've got another idea for you after this, so we can finish the California thing.
Oh, sure. You can. Yeah, absolutely. By all means, fill us in on what your thoughts are on other subjects.
Well, I want to make it really topical for today because today is the 3rd and tomorrow is the 4th of July. And the one thing that people don't do, although they're trying to do it nationwide, is have a reading of the Declaration of Independence. And the angle that I come at this is, because I've done that on another show, I had the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in the background and I read the Declaration and it went over really well. But what I notice is that we've lost our symbols of freedom. And we were speaking about this off the air a little bit earlier today. The first one being fireworks. I mean, this is a case study in government taking over what is a free symbol of individuals. So for a long time in this country, individuals, I imagine in the musket days, they were shooting guns to celebrate their freedom. That's not a good idea in a crowded area, of course, so I understand the regulation on that. But fireworks, people used to have their own fireworks. Yes, there were injuries, and yes, we know there are problems, and there are probably ways to make them safer, but the idea that only government can shoot off fireworks tells me that only government can celebrate freedom, which is no freedom at all, because government isn't freedom. Government is control. Government is power. The necessary thing in certain areas, think about this. Look at the symbols, and symbols are very important. Look at the symbols that we've given up. We've given up our fireworks to the government in officially sanctioned ceremonies. We don't celebrate them ourselves. Our cars, we're giving up highway lanes to HOV, high occupancy vehicle lanes, different weights, different regulations, different places that we can drive. We're giving up our cars. We're giving up, all over the nation, guns. The gun is the greatest symbol of freedom we have because nobody else in the world can just put a gun on their hip and walk down the street and say, I'm a free person. Look at me. I can carry a gun. This is a symbol of my freedom. If you do it for no other reason, nothing at all, but just to express your freedom in that symbol, that's now being lost because they have to be concealed or they have to be regulated. Or in many cases like California, you can't even carry one because power rests with the government. It doesn't rest with the individual. So our symbols overall are being reversed. And maybe you have a couple of symbols of your own, but those are the ones I think of. Fireworks, our cars, our individual freedom to travel, and our individual freedom to protect ourselves. Are being lost. And then I think it's a tragedy in this time when we should be celebrating our freedom with our free symbols.
Well, I agree with that. And I live in Delaware, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the only state in the union where you are not even allowed to have or use a sparkler. You know, the sparklers, they're about 8 inches long. It's like a piece of wire, and it's coated with phosphor and you know, some kind of an amalgam of magnesium, and you put a cigarette lighter in it, and it sparkles. I mean, I'm sure you're allowed to have those out there in California, aren't you?
Fireworks are banned. I think that includes sparklers. In fact, I'm sure the cigarette lighters are going to be banned at some point. We talked about that, unless it's for marijuana, in which case that's okay, because marijuana is medicinal.
Wow.
But think about this for a second. Imagine that we're Alinsky people and we want to control the population and control their minds and control their symbols. What is it about fireworks that the government finds so threatening that it has to be a government-sanctioned display? Now, they do good displays. I mean, I love them. I'm not saying don't do them. but I'm just saying, why is it important symbolically to ban the use of fireworks for individuals and have it all government control? What's the psychology there? How does that work? You got an idea?
Well, yeah, in fact, I do. In Delaware, what they tell us, and this is probably, it could be close to being true, the State Fire Marshals Association has essentially something that is almost like a rent-seeking relationship with the insurance companies in the state. And the insurance companies will say, to make things really safe, which means that we can reduce rates for the consumers and the ratepayers in your state, you ban all those things and you'll see your rates come down by, I don't know, it could be as much as a penny every other year. Wouldn't that be great? You know, and that's basically, that's the reason. You know, it's always safety, Greg. There's always some authoritarian, symbolically jackboot-wearing, steel-helmeted, dictatorial, tyrannical type that is going to say, I am concerned about your safety, therefore I am taking your rights away, so you will be safer. And I guess I'm just tired of hearing from those people. I don't believe a word from them anyway.
Okay, so why don't they ban barbecues?
That's a very good question. You know, it's a rhetorical question. I mean, I often say to those people, you know what, I know a country that is so incredibly safe, there are really no car accidents in the whole country. And they say, really? What country is that? My answer is, it is the People's Federated Democratic Socialist Republic of North Korea. And the reason that there are no car accidents there is that almost nobody has a car. And if you do have it, you're not allowed to drive it unless the government gives you specific permission to drive it. Is that the kind of society you want? And every once in a while, one of these people will say, well, if it's safe, I'm all for it. Yeah, give me a break. It's unbelievable.
Here's my counter to that argument. People, the liberals come out and say, gun bans. If we ban the guns and it saves one life, then it's worth it. And I'm saying the opposite is also true then. If it saves one life to have guns, then it's worth distributing them to everybody. You know, because if one is true, then the other is true. If it saves one, if your criteria is it saves one life, okay, then I can turn that right around and say, okay, fine then. If it saves one life to have the Second Amendment exist as it does, as it's supposed to, with an uninfringed right where people carry when they want to, and that saves just one life, then you can't have any gun restrictions of any kind. And so you can turn it around that way too. I'm trying to think of the psychology. Is it just conditioning that they say, okay, we'll condition them here, we'll condition them there. If we take away their fireworks, they won't feel independent because they can't express their freedom. If we take away guns, they can't defend themselves. We'll condition them to be controlled and be fearful. Let's take cars next. That's the third of my big three here. If we limit their ability to drive, then they'll be more conditioned living in our smart communities, our global warming apartments and lower thermostats and everything like that. So are they that smart that this is all coordinated, or is it just kind of accidentally happening where they control every way they can, and the collective effect is that people just give up everything and their spirits get, you know, kind of die in the process. So let's take that and let's take cars as a freedom symbol in a little bit. What do you think so far?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that just because a bureaucrat, a statist, a collectivist, a UN devotee calls something smart doesn't mean that it is smart. And when somebody says, oh, we've got a new smart zoning plan, I always think to myself, no, you mean the fascist zoning plan. Because ultimately, all they really want to do is control everybody else. Greg, stand by for one moment, if you would. I wanted to remind everyone, and in case people are not really following the Internet Radio Network ratings, it is very, very clear that the switch is on to us here at conservativenationradio.org, and I don't mean just in listenership. You all know my buddy Robert Garding and his program, The New Wise Conservatism Show,
which now comes to you right here on conservativenationradio.org every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central. Robert has a really big internet following, so listen up on Saturday and you'll find out why. Thousands love his brand of New Wise Conservatism, and so will you. The New Wise Conservatism Show with Robert Garding, Saturdays at 4 Eastern, 3 Central, on conservativenationradio.org, Real Conservatism for Real Conservatives. Greg, you know, a real conservative like me and like you believes in freedom. And I guess we certainly believe in personal responsibility. And we certainly believe that the promise of America is opportunity, not guarantees. We do believe in a safety net for our fellow citizens, but we don't believe in a hammock. I think California is really all about the hammock, isn't it?
What is California all about? That's a great question. It depends where you are, because the coastline, the liberal coastline of transplants that have come here, I think they're all about taking. They're all about taking for themselves. They take their wealth. People come here to take from other people. They redistribute wealth. The people that are working hardest, you know, physically, I think, are in the farm areas, and they're getting totally screwed over. You've got the mountain communities. You've really got three different states here. So you can't really say California, what's it about anymore, because it's so divided. And I think that's part of the problem. I would actually divide the state further. I'd divide it in a couple of different states. I think it might be interesting if you split it down the middle and you have, like, you know, real Californians versus East Coast liberals. You'd have two very different states, and they'd be governed very differently. It'd be kind of interesting to see. But you made a really good point there about language earlier. And language, I think, is the key to talking about issues. And we don't use language well. And this is why I started Penglis Online News, my news YouTube news broadcast. I am talking about seeing if you can carry them, because I want to start doing this more in the fall, these short little 10-minute newscasts using correct conservative language for every issue that we talk about, and framing things in terms where we win. Because right now, if you look at any issue, the Democrats always pick the language, they frame the terms, and conservatives are almost always on the defensive. What I want to do is turn that around. For example, the Supreme Court recently overthrew the Defense of Marriage Act, and they overturned Proposition 8, and everybody was celebrating that now there's no longer a ban on gay marriage. Well, there never was, because there's no such thing as a gay marriage. Marriage means one thing. It is a unique relationship between a man and a woman. That's all that it means. So what the court really said was, all you folks who are married, and we know what the term married is a man and a woman, your definition just got screwed. Your whole marriage is now meaningless, because now it can mean whatever the judges want it to mean. And so if we start calling these, as I call them, changed definition marriages, okay, it's not a gay marriage, it's a changed definition marriage, okay?
That's
so
right.
So if you start using
That's
language
right.
like that, now that's a whole different thing. It was never a ban on gay marriage. What it was a preservation of the definition of marriage. And if you turn this around and say, we have people who are attacking the definition of marriage. They want to change the definition of marriage. They want to make marriage worthless. They want to change it around. And here's something else that's going to get more interesting in this debate. Because if marriage is, how come, you know, if marriage is a right, and it's a right of equality, marriage isn't a right, so how can a, quote, gay marriage, or as I say, a changed definition of marriage be a right? So it's almost like that is a superior right. And if you follow this through, and this is what I'm starting to read about now, follow this through, what other rights are you going to follow from a, quote, gay marriage right? Okay? You're going to have reproductive rights. Because you can't guarantee, you can't have a family with a man and a woman and a woman. There has to be a third party involved. So now you've expanded the definition even further. So if that gay marriage was a right, then isn't it a right to have kids? Because that's what a traditional marriage can do all by themselves, biologically, the old-fashioned way. We know how, okay? So we're adding, this is going to, you know, there's no way this is going to end. This could go on for all kinds of things. It could be adoption. It could be artificial insemination. It could be everything. And who's going to pay for that now? If it's a right, are the taxpayers going to pay for it? So who's going to be on the hook for all these extended family gay union relationships as these benefits get extended further and further down the line, okay? So this is why marriage has to mean something, and this is why it has to be preserved. That's where I stand.
I'm with you on that one. You know, the laws that surround and define marriage, the liberal left would like to position that as if it is a deliberate attempt to discriminate against and marginalize
gay men and lesbian women. Actually, those laws do discriminate. They discriminate against single people. That means that I'm in the same boat, and, you know, if you're not married, then, you know, you are simply, you know, I guess you're being discriminated against. The next time we chat, which I hope will be a week from tonight, we can discuss why I believe that marriage is not a right. Rather, it is an institution. And, Greg, thank you for being with me tonight, and I do look forward to speaking to you again 1 week from tonight. And be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. You know,
yeah, I'll be here with Maury to talk about then.
Say again?
Yes, I'll be with you with more issues to talk about then. I just want to make one more quick
point.
Very
fine.
Conservatives.
Yeah.
Conservatives, I want to make sure that everybody understands this. When we talk about, you know, gay unions, it's not that we're ever against people getting together. I personally have no problem, you know, man and man, woman and woman. If you want to get together, if you want to call yourselves married, that's fine. You do whatever you want, you know, and you're free to live your life as you see fit. But when it comes to society, when it comes to legal definitions, and when it comes to our English language of how we define things, the word marriage has to mean something. It has to mean something specific, and it can't be changed. So all we really need to solve this dilemma is a new term. And so don't lump in different relationships into marriage so that we can treat the issues that come up with those different relationships as separate issues. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you. That is the way I look at it. Greg, thanks for being with me, and I'll be speaking with you again very soon, my friend.
That's good. Take care.
All right, pal. Have a great night. This is conservativenationradio.org. More of your calls coming up after this, so don't go away.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
So glad we left that stupid party.
No joke.
Hey, baby, are you an overdue library book? Because you got fine written all over you.
Ugh, barf. What about that girl with a hoop earring?
Ridiculous. When she was dancing...
Megan, look out! Look out!
Oh, my God. Becky. Becky, are you okay? My arm. I think it's broken. Can you bend it? It's already bent. In the wrong direction. I can't believe this. I'm so sorry. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Really? Just buzzed?
Yeah, I swear.
Well, in that case, my arm is fine. Ah, that's better.
You're really okay? You're serious, Becky?
No, genius. I'm not serious.
Ow! My arm! It hurts!
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Today, you brushed your teeth. You skipped the floss. You combed your hair. You took the train. You did the crossword. You missed 22 across. You went to work. You had a meeting. You ate your lunch. You had another meeting. You wondered, how is anyone supposed to get any work done around here with so many meetings? You left the office. You took the train. You ate your dinner. You brushed your teeth. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a brutal EF5 tornado rips through town, leaving 30,000 people without power. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
ConservativeNationRadio.org. This is Radio Free America. Thanks a lot for being along with me this evening, the day before July 4th. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. Very glad that you could make it. Coming to you tonight from the beautiful and really well-appointed
very professional digital broadcast studio of Delaware Wright in Dover, Delaware, the capital of the first state. I don't know about you, but I'm going to Philadelphia tomorrow to watch the, I'm going to be at Independence Hall. I can't think of a better place to celebrate our country's birthday than at the location where the Declaration of Independence was signed. I am really looking forward to being there. It's going to be a lot of fun. One of the reasons is that I get to go to Pat's Steaks at 9th and Wharton. Ooh, do you like a good cheesesteak? You know, I mean, if you're not from the Mid-Atlantic, you probably know what a cheesesteak is, the cheesesteak sandwich, thinly sliced and almost shredded beef, grilled, and they'll melt cheese on it. They'll have fried onions or raw onions. Very often you can get mushrooms, you can get hot peppers, and you can get either mozzarella, provolone, American, or cheese whiz. That's my favorite. A Pat's steak with cheese whiz, order of fries, ketchup, ooh. I remember being at Pat's. This would have been in the very early part around January or February of 1979. And I had gone there after seeing the movie The Deer Hunter, with Robert De Niro and Meryl Streep, Christopher Walken, that film directed by Michael Cimino, and it was all the rage, and it was a good movie. It it came out before Apocalypse Now, but it was produced actually made after Apocalypse Now. But anyway, it was a pretty good movie. And now it's the movie's over, and it's like 1 in the morning, and my former girlfriend Susan and I are at Pat's, and it's February, and it is ice cold, and she and I are the only ones there. And out of the night pull two black Cadillac limousines with New Jersey plates on them. And out of the first one gets a guy who could only be described as the ugliest man in the world. And he walked up to the cheesesteak window at Pat's, and Susan and I were standing right there eating our steak sandwiches. And he said, 26 cheese with and one without. And the guys behind the counter, they just started making them boom, 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 with their spatulas and all that, just cutting up then, making it, slicing the fresh baked bread they've got. Then a moment later, out of the second limousine gets another guy who could only be described as the ugliest man in the world, and he walked up to the other window where you get drinks and fries, and he said, 26 regular fry, one small fry, 26 cherry Coke, one regular Coke. And the people behind the window began getting his drinks and making the French fries for him and everything, And then a couple of minutes later, when everything was ready, these two guys had gotten back in their black limousines, and they were both the drivers of these limousines. And the people at the windows waved at them, and Susan and I were just kind of silently standing there eyeballing this whole thing. And a moment later, out of the second limousine gets a guy with gray hair, a gray suit. It looked like it was expensive, but it also looked like it was cheap at the same time, And this guy had these eyes, and he glanced at Susan and I very, very quickly as he walked past us, and he walked up to the window, and he took out a wad of money that was 50s and hundreds, and he paid for everything, and his two drivers got back with these big bags of all this food, and they got back into their limousines, and off they went.
A couple of days later on the news, I saw the guy in the gray suit who came out and who paid for everything before they sped off into the night, apparently on their way back to the Garden State, I guess. That guy's name was Nicodemo Little Nicky Scarfo, and he was the underworld mafia don of Philadelphia. I often wondered, I guess he's the guy that got the one steak without cheese and or with onions and the one small soda and all that kind of stuff. We're going to take a break. More of your calls are coming up. Don't go away.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Packers.
Vikings.
Red State.
Blue State.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But no matter how different we are, we're all connected, and we can all make a difference. That's why United Way brings people, expertise, and resources together to improve the education, income, and health of our communities. The building blocks for a better life. When we live united, our efforts, magnified by others, add up to real change. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities. But real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So let's look beyond our differences.
Live united.
One by one, let's make a difference. Let's reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all.
Live united.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
ConservativeNationRadio.org, Radio Free America, right in your face. Good evening to you. It's about 2 minutes after the hour. This is the July 3rd, 2013 edition of Radio Free America. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. That, of course, the immortal Mason Williams number, Classical Gas, that we just heard at the top of the hour. I just... that is one of those songs. I think it's going to last the centuries, almost like Beethoven and, some of those other fancy guys that wrote orchestra music. It's one of my favorite songs to do at karaoke. That and Love is Blue by Paul Mir, those are my favorite karaoke songs. Now, reflecting the true international nature and character of Radio Free America, Christian in Denmark, good evening to you, my friend. How are things going over there?
Things are going very fine over here in Denmark. It's been a lovely day, and it's going to be even better tomorrow on your nation's birthday, 4th of July. So it's going great. How's going over there?
Oh, it's wonderful. You're right. Tomorrow is our Independence Day. Now, have you been to the United States, Christian?
No, I've never been, actually. But I've studied it from afar, read a lot of books about it, and follow it on Fox every night. So I think I'm pretty much up to speed. What I would like to, what I'm calling to talk about is a bit, as we've talked about before, the Muslim issue. If we could talk a bit about that.
Yes, it's very, very troubling to many of us here in America, no question about it.
Yeah, and it should be, because I don't think that you're quite, and I'm not, you know, speaking in any sort of disrespect or anything, but in your media, you're often focusing on the few Muslims that are actually committing the terror acts, like the ones on the 9/11 and such, and then paint a picture of that there is a lot of hardworking, good, productive Muslims that disagree with the terrorists. And the thing is, over here in Europe, we have much more Muslims pro capita than you guys have, and it's really the everyday kind of terrorism that they inflict on our nation that are far bigger problem, actually, or an equal big problem that I think that they should be worried about before it happens, so that you could perhaps prevent it. It's like over here. We take our nation's capital, Copenhagen. About 15 or a little less of the population is Muslim now. Back 20, 30 years ago, 30 years ago at least, there weren't hardly any. And now they're committing about 70% of the crime in that city. 15% of the population stands for over 70%. Of the crime, because Muslims are way more criminal people than non-Muslims are, really. So that's the aspect that you should that you should consider when you made our policies.
Well, they have an agenda. You know, when a Mohammedan in this country or your country or Germany or anywhere in the world builds a bomb and uses it to kill non-Muslims, they're not being radical. They are simply being devout. They're just doing what their religion tells them to do, and their religion tells them to convert anybody that's not a Muslim, and if they won't convert, you kill them. So they're not being radical. They're just doing what their religion tells them to do, and that's what most people do not understand about Mohammedanism.
Yeah, if I could just interrupt just one thing. It's because you're painting a picture of that the Muslims are with bombs, and that's not the case over here in everyday life. No, the real problem over here is on a lesser scale, but on really on a bigger scale, but not with bombs. They attack people on the streets. They attack people and beat them up, and they especially target weak individuals such as people in wheelchairs, old people, young people like kids and girls, Danish girls and Danish women. Rape and drugs and all sorts of that. So it's the everyday crime that they are committing that are really kind of like a real attack on the nation, because that's why it's not great to use to talk so much about bombs, because bombs go off, the Muslim bombs go off very seldom when you think about it, but the everyday violence goes on every day. For instance, and that's another thing that I'm important to take a look at, when the Muslims comes to a neighborhood, then they are very few in the beginning, and then they don't make that much noise. And you think, oh, they're not so bad, these Muslims, they're not making much noise, but then they get a lot of children, and then the more people that moves in, and then they take over the neighborhood, and then the tone change. Then they get much more radical. They shout whores, prostitutes and hookers when they see a Danish girl, that not has their hair covered, like Sharia tells, it says it should be, and such. And that's really what is scary. And actually, we have a lot of areas in Denmark where the police and where the fire trucks they don't dare to come because they're practically mustn't run, and the Danish people are living there like in prison, living in fear. And it was all neighborhoods that 20 and 30 years ago were very well functioned.
You don't have the right to keep and bear arms in Denmark as we have in America, do you?
No, we're not even allowed to have knives that are over the length of about 10 centimeters. The knives are not allowed to be longer than actually 7. I've just heard from my friend here. If the knife is over, the blade is over 7 centimeters long, it's illegal in Denmark. And forget guns.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I view the European population, generally speaking, as being subjects as opposed to being citizens. In this country, of course, government is always trying to figure out a way to disarm the citizens. But in the United States, there are something close to 150 million privately owned firearms.
Yeah.
And frankly, there is no army, no government, nothing in the world that can stop a population that is that well armed. And I think everybody in the world knows it. That's why we're still a free country. I would think that the Danish people would eventually want to kind of rise up against the Mohammedans and throw them out. I mean, you believe in freedom of the press there.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about the incident a few years ago where a newspaper cartoonist, he was killed, wasn't he, for putting a drawing of Mohammed.
Kurt Westergaard. That made the cartoon wasn't killed, but they attempted to kill him, and he's living
and
in fear.
And did they catch the ones
now.
That? Did they catch the ones
yes.
that did it?
Okay, yeah,
and what happened to them?
To be honest, I don't really know, but I think he went to jail.
I would hope that they were put in prison for a very, very long time. You know. Now, when do you plan to come over to the United States and visit with us?
It's going to be a little bit difficult, so I don't really think that's going to happen. It's, the thing is, I'm disabled and I'm in a wheelchair, so it's a bit difficult.
That would not in any way prevent you from coming to the United States, Christian. You know,
yeah,
I mean, we have a lot of laws and regulations here that businesses and governments and everything
sometimes
and everybody has to. You know, we have to accommodate people that are in a wheelchair, but that should not stop you from coming here.
Yeah.
Say again.
But I'm having enjoying it from afar. So
okay,
that's
well,
fine.
I hope that you will come here soon.
Yeah. But,
say again.
But I think it's important that when you have the debate about Muslims over there, that you start focusing in on how Muslims take over well-functioning neighborhoods in Europe and turn them into nightmares. And that's actually, I think, just as important as speaking about the so to speak, normal terrorism, like, you know, with bombs, 9/11 and such, in regard to the Muslim issue, because a lot of people are going to be victims to it. Every day here in a small country, we own about 5.5 million people in Denmark, and every day has its victims of Muslim crime. Every single day, someone in Denmark get mugged and such, and they bleed our welfare expenditures dry. All the welfare benefits, they bleed them dry. And you really should, before they get a chance to take over your neighborhoods, you should be sure that they're prevented from doing that.
Well, they've already done that here. They've already done that in the United States in Dearborn, Michigan, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Minneapolis, Minnesota, and parts of Tennessee. It is very, very troubling. But, Christian, I've got to run. Thank you so much for calling in, and I hope I will be hearing from you again.
I just have a quick little comment before I leave. A quick comment that is about the thing about the Muslims in about the Muslims being moderate and being against the Sharia law in many surveys made in Europe over half of the Muslims believes in Sharia law, and that's the ones that escaped from the Muslims country. They over half of them believes in Sharia law. So it's not just a little bit of a little extremist group of Muslims that believes in Sharia law. Over half of them says that they do, and probably more. Just important to remember that there is no such thing as a moderate Muslims. They are Muslim and not Muslims. And thank you for letting me speak on the fine show. And I wish all of you and your listeners a great 4th of July.
Thanks very much, Christian. I hope to hear from you again soon. Have a great night now.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All the way from Denmark, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, listen, I want to issue an invitation here to you, and that is to join up with my buddy, Delaware political veteran Christopher Manti, every Friday right here on conservativenationradio.org for the Christopher Manti Show. At its new time, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, for a fresh take on conservative thought, modern America, the threat of Sharia, and the weird, wild, wacky, wonderful world of Washington, D.C., plus a little heavy metal rock and roll thrown in from time to time for good measure. The Christopher Manti Show, which we probably should have just named it Eponymous. That's at Fridays at 5 Eastern, 4 p.m. Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. It's about 17 minutes now after the hour. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176. Got almost a full chat room. Very interesting. Very glad that you could make it this evening. Obviously, there has been some big news today. Egypt is now essentially a military dictatorship, and this is kind of troubling, although at the end of the day, if people get the government they deserve, hey, as they say. Anyway, I'm going to take a very quick break, and more of your calls when we come back. We'll be talking a little bit about the Egyptian situation. If you've got any comments or questions about that, have them ready. We'll be back at you in two shakes of a lamb's tail. Stay right where you are. Don't go away.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
Sure, humans can be a little weird at times, but take it from me, I'm a dog. And a person is about the best thing that can happen to a shelter pet. So if you want to learn how you can be that person, get down to your local pet shelter or visit theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
¶¶
Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number, and you know by that music, which is called Ashokan Farewell. That's from the Ken Burns program on PBS around 1990, I think, 1989, called The Civil War. That was absolutely fantastic. I think a lot of people consider that to be the greatest television documentary of all time. It's at least as good as Victory at Sea, which is one of my favorites. But we are today celebrating the 150th anniversary, not only of the Civil War in general, but of the last day of the Battle of Gettysburg. Battle of Gettysburg was 3 days of blood and carnage and fighting and gunpowder and fire and cannons and rifles and artillery and horses and people and everything else in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I've been there many times. I absolutely love it. It is hallowed ground. I mean, it is sacred ground. There's absolutely no question about it. This is from The Civil War Day by Day by E.B. Long and Barbara Long. July 3rd was a Friday in 1863. In the little white cottage on Cemetery Ridge, General George Gordon Meade met with his corps commander shortly after midnight to discuss the future of the Army. It was decided to stay at Gettysburg and await Confederate attack. Meade began to dig fortifications on Cemetery Ridge and brought troops there from Culp's Hill and elsewhere. Guns were moved up. There was a dawn artillery duel at Culp's Hill and Spangler's Spring. Union forces attacked the Confederates at Spangler's Spring heavily and often, and eventually the Southerners retreated. Now it was up to Lee and the remainder of the Army of Northern Virginia. Both flanks of the Federals had been tried. Perhaps a powerful attack at Meade Center would do the job and crack the enemy line. Once more, Longstreet opposed the plan. The possibly 15,000 attacking infantry would be the divisions of George E. Pickett, Henry Heath, and Dorsey Pender. About 1 p.m., a most thunderous artillery duel opened. Confederates began and were answered by 80 Federal guns. For 2 hours, the shelling continued. Then the Federals slackened off. Believing the Union line to be weakening, the Confederates prepared to attack. Messages were sent. Longstreet gave a reluctant nod to Pickett, and Pickett's three brigades moved towards the Emmitsburg Road. Pettigrew and Trimble also marched forward. Near the Emmitsburg Road, the Southerners realigned ranks. Union batteries opened fire, cutting gaps in the solid gray ranks. An eyewitness wrote, "Men fire into each other's faces not 5 feet apart. There are bayonet thrusts, saber strokes, pistol shots, men going down on their hands and knees, spinning around like tops, throwing out their arms, gulping up blood, falling, legless, armless, headless. There are ghastly heaps of dead men." The Confederates moved smartly ahead through the artillery fire. Musketry opened and the infantry charged the dug-in Federals. General officers fell. Armistead reached the stone fence, crossed it, and shouting, "Follow me," he fell. Artillery and Federal infantry closed in mercilessly. Units were broken, battle flags falling with the men. The Confederates retreated across the trampled fields to a sorrowing commander. All he could say was, "All this has been my fault." The Battle of Gettysburg was over. And indeed it was. On that same day, the Confederates surrendered Vicksburg. They surrendered it on July 4th. On Independence Day, Saturday, July 4th, 1863, the line of Confederate wagons, the line of Confederate units marching away from Gettysburg was 17 miles long. That was the high water mark of the Confederacy. They crossed the Emmitsburg Pike. They came out of the West Woods. They crossed the Emmitsburg, the woods to the west of the Federal position at a location that is known either as the Copse of Trees or the Angle. There was a stone wall there, what they would call a stone fence back then.
And some of the Confederates got there, but most of them did not. The fire from the Union line was simply too heavy. They just could not take that Union line. If they had taken the Union line, all of the history of the world from that moment forward would have been different. I don't know if World War I would have ever happened. I don't know if the Spanish-American War would have happened. I don't know if World War II would have happened. Everything would have been different. There's absolutely no question about that. 150 years ago today, the culmination of the Battle of Gettysburg, the high water mark of the Confederacy, Pickett's Charge. Day three of a three-day battle. Just unbelievable. I hope that you, if you have not been to Gettysburg, I hope that you will go one day. Gettysburg is a very, very nice little town. It's a place of tremendous historic importance in our country's history. Is everywhere. I mean, it's a, you know, it is a place that functions as a result of its history. And there, you know, there are great diners in Gettysburg. I mean, if you, like me, love a good diner, Gettysburg would be the place. No question about it. There's about seven or eight of them right in town. And the one on the north end of town called the Lincoln Diner, that I think is probably the best one. I've eaten at all of them, and I think I like the Lincoln Diner the best. And I think it's probably called the Lincoln Diner because directly across the street is the railroad station, which is now being restored, where President Lincoln arrived in November of 1863 to give a few appropriate remarks at the dedication of the National Cemetery in Gettysburg, the first national cemetery in our country. And he gave a few appropriate remarks. And those remarks have been known to history ever since as the Gettysburg Address. And at the time, it was not received particularly well as a speech. In fact, apparently, a lot of people were disappointed by it. As he sat down after giving the speech, he turned to Edward Everett, who was one of the other speakers that day, who had just finished speaking for 2 hours and 20 minutes or something. That was the way things were done back then. That was considered normal. You know, people today will go see a movie for an hour and 45 minutes, and back then they would go listen to somebody talk for an hour and 45 minutes. Really kind of, you know, my how things have changed, I suppose. But Lincoln, after giving the Gettysburg Address and finishing with that just incredible verbal flourish, that government of the people, by the people and for the people shall not perish from this earth. And the crowd apparently did not even know that he had finished. He began to sat down and had sat down, and then there was applause. And at that point, he turned to Edward Everett, and depending upon the account that you read or what you hear, he said to him either that speech won't scour, which means that speech is not particularly well received. It didn't really work very well. I heard recently reported someone said that he sat next to Edward Everett and turned to him and said something like, I wish I had been able to come up with something better. But it has been universally reported that Edward Everett later said to Abraham Lincoln, Mr. President, you came closer to the reason and the central purpose of us being here in 2 minutes than I did in 2 hours. So Edward Everett, who was the most well-known orator of his day in this country, obviously understood a good speech when he heard one. And the Gettysburg Address has gone down in history as the, you know, probably the greatest, one of the two or three greatest presidential speeches of all time. We are coming up on 30 minutes after the hour.
This is Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. Duke Brooks here. 718-305-7176 is the number. We are going to take a quick break. Very hot summer. Tomorrow is Independence Day. I hope you have a wonderful July 4th. More of your calls, some common sense from Kevin Wade, and additional observations on what's going on in the world coming up. So stay right where you are.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey. He's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of a dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism. And we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. Duke Brooks here. Thanks very much for being along. The number is 718-305-7176 is our number. I see quite a few people in the chat room, and we are now embarking on the last half hour of this edition of Radio Free America. I wonder if anybody is in Egypt listening. I kind of don't, you know, think that they are. Let me give you the latest here. This is breaking news from France 24. It's probably a service of AFP, Agence France-Presse. Let's see if I can. Well, actually, they've got a headline, but they have no body copy other than the Egyptian army suspends their constitution. President Morsi ousted. Egyptian Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. I'm not making that up, seriously, has announced the suspension of the Egyptian constitution and the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi. Mohamed, you know, I just, look, the Mohammedan countries are, they're third world countries, you know, that's what they are. There is no tradition of democracy. There's no tradition of freedom. Those things are unknown in those countries. They have always been unknown. They are they're not going to happen over there. And there's a reason why they're not going to happen. In the West, in the Western industrialized democracies, which is where we live,
That includes our friend Christian living in Denmark. Denmark is a Western industrialized democracy, and so is the United States. In fact, we are the 600-pound gorilla as far as the Western industrialized democracies go. We're the 600-pound gorilla as far as the whole world is concerned, and I like that, frankly. I really don't care what the liberals think. I don't care. They're wrong, okay? They're wrong about everything. Every liberal always wrong all the time. Those are just the facts. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is, but I digress. They're not going to have democracy over there. We had democracy in the West about 2,500 years ago. That's how long our traditions of democracy have existed in the West. We have not always been democratic, and there are very few places in the world today, including the U.S., that are democratic as far as a form of government is concerned. We in America live in a representative constitutional republic. That is different from a democracy. The modern definition of democracy is a nation state and form of government where the people have regular and credible and meaningful input into how the government is run and how the nation state conducts its own affairs. And that's fine, all right? I mean, actual democracy where everybody votes on everything, we would all have to go to the polls a couple of times a week. And after a while, people would get tired of it. And after a while, that's probably okay in a place like ancient Greece, ancient Athens. It's probably okay. It's probably all right in ancient Rome. They were a lot closer to the type of government that we have back then than the ancient Greeks were. But even still, we have had a couple of thousand years ago two of the founding Western civilizations, ancient Greece and ancient Rome, both with representative governments to one extent or another. After the Roman Empire sort of went by the wayside, and look, I'll be honest with you, I know why they did. They decided that they were going to change one of the central defining institutions of their society, and that was their polytheistic religion, where they worshipped Zeus, and they worshipped Janus, and they worshipped Mars, and they worshipped all these other gods and goddesses and everything, and they swapped it out for Christianity. Now, there's nothing wrong with Christianity. Frankly, Christianity has stood the test of time, like almost nothing else. Judaism is the only religion that I know of that has lasted longer than Christianity has. Maybe Buddhism, I'm not sure. Tao or Shinto, I don't know. Mohammedanism is only about 1,400 years old. However, the Roman religion was changed out. And when you do that to a society, the society itself simply cannot continue to function. It just can't. And that is what happened in ancient Rome. The Egyptians did the same thing. You've heard of Tutankhamun, right? I mean, you know, who has not heard of King Tut? And Steve Martin once said, "Now when I die, don't you think that I'm a nut? Don't want no fancy funeral, just one like old King Tut." You know, beautiful, great, all right? King Tut's father was this Egyptian king, or pharaoh, as they say now, and this dude's name was Akhenaten, and Akhenaten was a ruler, dictator-type dude, and what he did is he began the very slow destruction of the Egyptian civilization by trying to change their religion. They had a polytheistic system. They had the god Horus. They had Anubis. They had Thoth, they had Isis, they had Osiris, they had, you know, the jackal god, the snake god, the alligator, all these different gods. And then one day, this dude inherits the throne of the upper and the lower kingdom, and his name is Akhenaten, and he decides that from now on, Egypt is going to be monotheistic. And he builds his own temple to worship the sun god that was named Aten. And after he died, one of his sons, Tutankhamun, became the king, the pharaoh. And he died at a young age. And I think Tutankhamun wanted to bring back the old gods, but societies don't go for that. And even though Christianity is obviously a religion that makes a lot of sense, and it's obviously a true and correct one, as far as I'm concerned, you can't simply impose it on people the way the Roman Emperor Constantine did about 300 years after Christ. It really simply does not work. It took down their civilization. That's one of the things that took down their civilization. After that, we had the Holy Roman Empire. We had the Mohammedans invading southwestern and southeastern Europe four times, up through Iberia and up through what we call the Balkan states today, coming from Asia Minor, which today is called Turkey. Finally, the Pope decided, look, I've had enough of this, and he sent an army into the Middle East to try to clean them out. And that did not work. A whole bunch of things happened in history as a result of that, but that's kind of what we've got in the world today. But we think the way we do, and our society is the way it is, and we value the things we value, and we have developed the things that we have developed because there have been intellectual watersheds and intellectual movements in Western civilization that have never existed in Eastern civilization. We have had the Renaissance, the Reformation, the Age of Reason, and the Enlightenment. And we are now living in our modern age because of those massive intellectual movements that have taken place over about the last 700 or 800 years in Western civilization. There was never a Renaissance in the Mohammedan countries. They're not capable of coming up with it. That's just the way I feel. You got a problem with that? Hey, listen, I love it when people call to disagree. As long as you're polite, I'm going to be polite with you. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. You know, we are very proud to be associated with the most effective identity security and credit monitoring service that there is, and that's called LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There really and truly is nothing that even comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock, go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationradio.org, and click on the LifeLock banner. It just makes common sense to protect your identity and your assets and things today. Speaking of common sense, I've got a world-class expert on the subject right here. Here's Kevin Wade.
My name's Kevin Wade. It's a short name, and it's easy to remember. As the Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in Delaware last year, I met some of the best people in America during the campaign. In Delaware, everyone knew my opponent's name. When he first entered politics, Take the Money and Run was a hit record. But the voters returned him to office for the eighth time. This is America, and the voters have the final say. I'm a businessman, an engineer, not a politician, but I want to speak with you about the issues, because whether you're interested or not, politics touches all of our lives and all of our bank accounts. A thought on President Obama's second term after this.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what Living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The president is obviously a good family man. There's no doubt about that. But the president must also be a good leader for our extended American family. If his first 4 years are any indication, our nation may be entering a period of very serious trouble. It's nice to meet you. That's Common Sense. I'm Kevin Wade.
All right, Kevin. We hear from Kevin regularly every Wednesday night at about 20 minutes before the top of the second hour with Common Sense with Kevin Wade. Kevin is a great guy. He's about my best friend in Delaware. He was the candidate for the U.S. Senate in Delaware last year, as you just heard him mention a short while ago. And Delaware is kind of a one-party state. The communists hold, the Democrats really hold sway in Delaware right now, which is a crying shame because it is hurting the state. I just, it's funny to me as a conservative Republican and probably to you as well. To me, 3 minus 4 equals -1. But to a liberal, 3 minus 4 equals you're a racist. I mean, seriously, that's the way they think. You just can't continue to print money, give it away, not have people work for it. It just, it really doesn't work. As Republicans, we believe in a safety net for our fellow citizens. We do not believe in a hammock. The Democrats believe in a hammock. That's basically what they want. And they want their friends to be in that hammock. That way they know that they will always be reelected. Because what the Democrats really want, especially the liberals, they just want to exercise power over everybody else that they possibly can. We're coming up on about 12 and a half minutes until the end of our little excursion together here on Radio Free America. Going to take a quick break. More of your calls are coming up, so don't go away.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Radio Free America on conservativenationradio.org. Duke Brooks here. 718-305-7176 is the number. That little piece of bumper music, of course, the great Bernard Herrmann, who wrote that, the theme to North by Northwest, what I think is Alfred Hitchcock's best movie, starring Cary Grant, Eva Marie Saint, Martin Landau, James Mason. I mean, Edward Platt. It's just an unbelievably great film. Christopher Manti is with us. Christopher, my friend, happy 4th of July to you.
I am. Thank you, even though it's not the 4th yet. But thanks for that.
Yeah, but you can never be too early with things like that. I mean, I was going to wish you a Merry Christmas, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's a good idea to get these things done, you know?
I understand.
How are you doing today, my buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm glad I'm not in Egypt. And just wanted to call in and make sure everyone's going to listen to my program Friday night at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Christopher Manti Show. I was going to say, you sound really good today. Are you in some new getup?
No, it's the same old getup that I normally wear, which is a T-shirt that says Jeff Craig for Governor. Whenever I come up
you just roll out of bed
in that. Well, I don't know, but wait a minute. How would you know? What are you talking to people in my neighborhood or something? What's going on there? Listen, Delaware's a small state. We're at opposite ends of it, pal. Come on now.
Have a friend, Linda. I don't know. She knows things. I don't know. I apologize.
All right, that's it. She's all right. You're both in trouble now. Anyway, I am at Jeff Craig's digital studio from DelawareWrite.com here in Dover, and I was hoping to see you today. There's no place in the state that's more than an hour away from the state capitol here. When are you going to come down and visit us?
This is true. When I don't get work during the day, I had this job. I have made me do stuff, so I was not able to come. Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
I know my priorities are.
You know.
I know.
Yeah, what's going on? Okay, so
totally backwards.
Anyway, on Friday, what are we going to be hearing from the Christopher Manti Show on Friday?
Well, you never quite know, which is a good reason to listen, but you can be sure I'll be talking about this Egyptian situation because I know that this Muslim Brotherhood group is not going to go quietly into that sweet night. It's going to be ugly, and they've been waiting 100 years for this, so we'll go into what that's going to probably come to, unfortunately. And, of course, we'll be continuing my series reading through the book of Revelation line by line. We're up to chapter 9, so we'll do at least chapter 9, which is a totally awesome exposition. We'll get into that. And, as always, a surprise or two, so I'd appreciate everyone listening in.
You know the book of the Apocalypse fairly well, right?
I do.
All right. Now, because when Israel was refounded in 1947,
mm-hmm.
Moshe Dayan was the defense minister back then, I believe, and I think that he suggested that the Dome of the Rock, the Mohammedan, religious structure that had been built. That's what they call it. And frankly, I'm just not going to give them that much respect because, frankly, I don't believe that they deserve it. But wanted to tear that down. They were talking about tearing it down so that the temple in Jerusalem could be rebuilt. Now, in the book of Revelation, what is the prediction vis-a-vis the next series of events when the temple is rebuilt?
Well, it depends on who you ask. There's chapter 11 does talk about the temple itself, but, and we'll go into this, that it's not an earthly structure, and it has instructions on who is inside and who is outside and whatever. I'll actually go into that in great detail. A lot of folks believe that a temple does have to be rebuilt first. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it's not required. That's my understanding of the scriptures. I could totally see it being done and being used as a ploy, as a means of deception and so forth. Definitely possible, a catalyst for this and that, sure. But I don't. My reading of it is it is not required. But if it is done, you would know that bad things would follow because a lot of people would be ticked off, especially your favorite religion.
Yeah, my unfavorite religion. Well, you know, if a person reads the Revelation of St. John, which he wrote on an island in the Mediterranean called Patmos, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
If somebody reads that and they're not really familiar with the context of the entire Old and New Testament, it could be very, very scary reading. That's why I'm probably not going to read it because I don't want to lose sleep at night.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right, and that's why I'm doing it. Yeah, and that's why I'm doing it, because you do need that backdrop and to understand that there's nothing new in that book. It's basically every line is a reference to another part of the Bible, and that's the whole point.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to hearing you again on Friday night, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work over there, please.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for calling in. Christopher Manti, the best-sounding guy that we've got on the air here at radio at conservativenationradio.org. You should, even if you're not like a Bible-type person, you need to check out his show because Christopher he is so relaxed and so smooth on the air, and he sounds so conversational, and he is certainly an expert on his subject, which is a good thing. ConservativeNationRadio.org. This is Radio Free America. The number is 718-305-7176. Duke Brooks is my name. About 3 minutes until this edition of Radio Free America goes into the ether to become a podcasted example of, I don't know what. I have no idea. You know, I'm not really a technology guy. I'm a technology guy when it comes to things that fly. All right, that's it. If it's a helicopter or a fixed-wing airplane, I'm all over it. All right, don't know that much about cars. I understand a couple of principles, but I remember my car I got for a graduation present from college in 1977 Camaro, and it was really cool. It was awesome. I wish I still had it. Great car. You know, you could open up the hood and you would have a very clear idea of what was going on. It was pretty simple. Okay, there's the engine. Those are the spark plugs. There's the distributor, the air cleaner, the carburetor's under that. Look, there's the gen. It was really very simple. You open up under the hood of these modern cars and you see all kinds of stuff that Mr. Scott lent Detroit from the engine room on the Enterprise, including a dilithium crystal, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's just, what has happened to them? I know what's happened to them. Combination of market forces and government interfering with telling car manufacturers you have to get these many miles and you can't pollute and, the spotted owl comes first and all that kind of nonsense. The fact of the matter is, if it gets to the point that gasoline is too expensive for people, guess what? The car manufacturers will respond to the market. If people can't afford to buy cars, the car manufacturers will figure out a way to sell the vehicles for less money, or they themselves will go out of business. That is known as market forces. It is supply and demand. It is one of those laws in the human race that can simply never be broken. It's right up there with the rules of physics. Thanks for being along this evening, everybody. I wish you a wonderful and happy and safe July 4th. I look forward to speaking with you next week. Thanks to Delaware Right for use of their studios. Have a good one.